Talk Central is brought to you by TomTom Africa, a leading international enabler of accurate location-based platforms throughout Africa, offering innovative, comprehensive, and high-quality digital maps to businesses and governments. For more information, visit tomtom.co.za/geospatial.
I'm Richard van Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 130 for the week starting 20 July 2015.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism.
That's right, Duncan. No headlines like Norwegian mass murderer accepted to Oslo University.
No, only relevant technology news on Tech Central. On Talk Central this week, we talk about MTN's new CEO, and we talk about MTN going open access for fiber.
Also this week, why Telkom is taking ICASA to court over the Vodacom Neotel deal, and we chat about whether contract customers should consider prepaid.
Before we get to all of that, though, we need to pay the bills. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Vox Telecom Cloud is the future of business. Developed from the ground up, it's a turnkey, fully managed approach to the cloud. It offers you guaranteed support, a national network with true redundancy, fully managed services across all layers, and most importantly, a single point of accountability. The Vox Telecom Cloud. It's how cloud should be. To find out more about the Vox Telecom Cloud, SMS your name to 45454 or visit voxtelecom.co.za. Standard rates apply.
Well, welcome, Richard.
How's it going?
Good, thank you. Recording on a Monday for a change. Makes an interesting change. So it's,
there's no Friday. There's no weekend ahead of us. It's quite
It's quite depressing.
Only a week ahead of us.
Anyway, let's get into it. Quite a lot to talk about this week. I think the biggest news over the last week is probably, there's some options to choose from, but certainly one of the biggest was the appointment of a new CEO in very short order at MTN South Africa. This came literally a week after MTN announced that its previous CEO, Ahmad Farouk, was resigning. According to the statement that came out at the time, for personal and family reasons, although a couple of days later it emerged on the wire services that he was becoming the new CEO of a major telco in Saudi Arabia. So not really family reasons at all.
Well, relocating the family may be an issue.
Yeah. Anyway, he'd been in the job for less than a year. And left a rather checkered record, I think. Left a terrible strike in his wake. Not his fault, probably, but certainly I think questions have to be asked about the way he dealt with it. Certainly if you speak to insiders there, they say that he had a very abrasive management style, and this probably didn't play very well with the Communication Workers Union strikers. And I've got no doubt that strike probably played some sort of role in his decision to leave. It's more instability at the top of MTN South Africa, which has been through so many CEOs in recent years. I mean, we've gone from Carl Pienaar to Zinaid Boubelia, who was in the job for just a year as well, to Ahmad Farouk, and now to the new CEO, who was appointed in very short order, Mteto Nyati, who's so well known to both of us. Former Microsoft South Africa MD, very new in the telecommunications industry. He joined MTN only in October of last year to head up their enterprise business, so really their IT business, their business IT services business, which they're keen to grow. And very quickly, in the space of what's it been, less than 9 months, he's been elevated to the CEO position at MTN South Africa. And an interesting choice, I think. He's not a traditional telco guy. MTN could very easily have brought in someone from one of its other operations, or even promoted someone from within MTN South Africa's telecoms business, traditional telecoms business itself, to head up the South African operations. But they've decided not to do that. They've decided instead to appoint someone whose experience really has been in running the South African operations of large American IT multinationals.
Maybe it's a good strategy, to change up the thinking a bit. Maybe it could resolve some of the issues and give it a new focus and direction. But
it's an interesting choice because, clearly MTN wants to grow its enterprise business, and it's identified that as a key growth area into the future, as have other telcos. But the bulk of MTN's revenues still come from consumer telecoms. And that's an area where Mteto has no experience. His experience is in business-to-business enterprise, you know, management, client management, and that sort of thing. Not in in managing a mass consumer audience. So it's an interesting, and we could probably even term it controversial, decision to appoint him to this position, given his lack of experience in the consumer telecom space. But I don't know, maybe he's the right guy to drive what where they need to drive, and that's into the sort of digital and enterprise ICT markets.
And what was the experience like of the previous CEOs? Were they were all telco
they heavies? Were all telco guys. Yeah, I mean Zunaid Bubulia and Carl Pino were both amongst the first employees at MTN, so they're steeped in MTN history. Ahmad Farooq came to MTN via Investcom, which was that huge acquisition that MTN did in, I think it was in 2006, if I'm not mistaken. They had operations. That's how they got all those operations in markets like Yemen and Syria and Afghanistan and Iran. Not Iran, sorry. But you know, a lot of those Middle Eastern markets and North African markets they got into through that huge Investcom acquisition, which was led at the time by the then CEO, group CEO of MTN, Putuma Nhleko. He came to the business through that. In fact, he spent a lot of time working up in West Africa. He headed up the Ghanaian operation for MTN for a while, and he also ran Nigeria and also was vice president of the West African region for MTN. And that is MTN's most important region, in Nigeria, of course, being MTN's biggest and most profitable market. He was brought into MTN South Africa, I get the impression, to sort out some of the mess here. I think he was you know, told to come in and, no uncertain terms, sort out what's gone wrong here in South Africa. We don't really know if he's achieved any of that yet. Certainly the strike action would have had some impact on MTN's performance, but they're releasing their interim results for the 6 months ended 30 June on the 5th of August. So that's, 3 weeks away? No, 2 weeks away. So we'll get a good insight then, I think, of the performance of the South African operation. And I think if it's performed particularly poorly, it'll give us some insight into perhaps why Ahmad Farooq is leaving. Although it certainly doesn't look like he was fired, given that within days of MTN announcing his resignation, he was appointed to head up a Saudi Arabian telco. It sounds like he's left of his own volition. But you know, he may have, I don't know. Let's not speculate too much. Let's see what the results say on the 5th of August. But it's going to be the most interesting set of numbers, I think, for the South African operation in quite some time.
Yeah, and let's hope they get some of the small things right this time and keep their workforce relatively happy. I think that could be a big one. It's something that they can't deal with again this year if it flares up again.
Yeah, indeed. It was interesting that within a day of Mteto being appointed as the new CEO of MTN South Africa, that he announced that the strike is over. you know, the question is, did they cave to this to the strikers' demands, or you know, or was it just a case of the previous CEO and this and the CWU, the union involved in the strike action, was it just a case of they couldn't deal with each other and a new CEO was always going to break the impasse, or what, were they on the verge of doing this anyway and he just happened to have been appointed at the right at a fortunate time when the strike would have been resolved anyway? And I suspect it's probably more of the latter, but
probably
2 weeks to the results are going to be fascinating to watch. Let's stick with MTN for a bit. Rechot, the announcement, I keep saying this week, but we're not recording on a Friday. Last week. That MTN is going to embrace open access for fiber to the home is a very interesting development. I've been hearing rumblings about them planning to do this for some time. But you know, for a major telco that I think detractors like to refer to as vertically integrated, to announce that they're going to go for this approach, although we don't know exactly how they define open access, and I guess the proof will be in the pudding. But for a major telco operator to go for an open access sort of approach is quite interesting. Now, the question is, are they going to go for the telecom definition of open access, which arguably isn't really open access? It just means ISPs can resell infrastructure on an IPC type model.
Yeah.
Or do they go for a true open access model, which companies like Dark Fiber Africa and Vumatel and others promote? We don't really know that yet. I suspect it's probably more of a telecom model than a Vumatel or a DFA model. But But I think it's a positive development anyway. And effectively leaves Vodacom, as far as I can tell, is the only big operator in South Africa that is certainly completely shunning the open access model in favor of that vertically integrated approach where they'll provide the fiber connection, the bandwidth on top of it, the services on top of that, etc., which I don't think is the right way to go in this market.
No, definitely not. And hopefully this move by NTM does mean that others, you know, the others that don't, like Vodacom, will follow suit. I mean, surely there will be some pressure somewhere along the line.
Indeed.
Let's just hope it's the right open access, like you said.
Indeed, indeed. And I think consumers are getting wise. You know, I think the smaller guys are doing a lot of clever marketing around open access and telling the market what it's all about. And I think you're starting to see the residents' associations and just individual consumers living in neighborhoods that are potential targets for FTTH rollout. I think they're starting to wise up to the fact that open access is in the consumer's interests and that the vertically integrated model is most certainly not in their interests.
Yeah. I've been seeing a lot of chatter on Facebook in particular with the community groups or the residents associations groups where people obviously ask the questions around the type of access. But the conversation that usually stems off from that is what consumers should go for, not go for.
Yeah.
And more often than not, people have spoken about the open access. The more educated residents in those neighborhoods telling the other guys, you know, just kind of explaining to them what's the right way to do this.
Yes.
And I think it is very good for the consumer to now understand what's in their best interest, especially when they're choosing for the rollout of fiber in the neighborhoods.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. So, yeah, I mean, the MTN move is interesting. MTN's fiber footprint is very tiny at the moment, though. I think they've committed to just a couple of neighborhoods around the country. The talk is that they've got a big rollout planned, but they haven't started that yet. You know, the more people talk open access, the more people adopt open access, whatever that definition is that they adopt it under, I think is good news for consumers.
Look, in whichever form they do the open access, I still think it's better than not having that on the table at all.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be much easier move to go from that telecom open access model to a truly open access model if your thinking is there. So, yeah, I'm glad they're doing it. I'm glad they're doing it like this, and they're happy to talk about it.
Yeah, great stuff. Well on MTN. So, sticking with big telcos, we all know that the Competition Commission and ICASA have both approved the acquisition by Vodacom of Neotel, although both regulators have imposed fairly significant conditions on the transaction going ahead. Telkom, however, has now taken the matter to the High Court in Pretoria and is specifically challenging ICASA's decision to approve the deal. They've brought this on what they're calling a semi-urgent basis. I'm not quite sure what that means. For an interim order to suspend the implementation of the ICASA decision pending the resolution of a final review. They arguing, in essence, that ICASA screwed up. That it didn't apply its mind or didn't promulgate the necessary regulations, I should say, prior to adjudicating the transfer of the control of the license from Neotel to Vodacom, specifically the spectrum licenses. The issue of Neotel spectrum is really the one that's the bone of contention. The argument is that that Vodacom shouldn't get access to spectrum through an acquisition when other operators in the market are prevented from getting access to spectrum through effectively government inaction over the publication of policy for high demand spectrum. So it's an interesting case, and I think that this this court case has the very real potential certainly to delay the Vodacom Neotel acquisition and potentially even to derail it.
Yeah, and setting some really interesting precedents for spectrum conversation going forward, I guess, because a lot of it will have ramifications based on what the outcome is.
Yeah, so we'll be watching that one very closely. We should have a judgment since it's being brought on I'm still not sure what a semi-urgent basis means, but we should have a judgment in the coming weeks or months at most. I'm sure Vodacom is watching this with a great deal of concern. Cool. What else is happening, Richard?
We've had this conversation about prepaid versus contract. It's a conversation that's always been floating around, especially in the last 2 years or so, since you know, there's been some really interesting prepaid offerings in the market.
Yeah.
But yeah, now we're talking. The report that was released this week or last week. What was the report? Comparing prepaid versus postpaid options in South Africa's market, and ranking them.
This is the terrific report that's been released.
Yes, that's a terrific report.
This morning, in fact.
Was it this morning?
It was this morning, yeah. Very interesting report, specifically looking at prepaid for the first time. You know, terrific has always historically looked at
The contract offering.
At the contract market, and they've done a specific breakdown for the prepaid market, and Telkom has emerged as the clear winner, which is interesting. But it kind of reflects some of the other research that's been done in this market. Another company called I think they're called Terrific. They've got some very similar names. It's confusing. Terrific and Terrific. But it kind of reflects the research that they did as well in the prepaid space. But, you know, Telkom has emerged as the clear winner. Cell C and MTN have come behind that. And then, interestingly, Vodacom stone last. In fact, they didn't score. Well, not a single one of Vodacom's plans managed to score in, what do they call it, the top value plans. And they blame that on its relatively high per minute and per SMS rates, which is interesting, but it kind of doesn't surprise me. You know, as a Vodacom customer, I feel I am paying over the odds for access to their network, particularly on data.
That's certainly not something that, I mean, when you think back a few years when contract was, you know, when you got a contract because that gave you the best value, you know, in terms of your call rates and obviously the benefit of having a phone with that, even though you pay for it. It's a bit sad to see that, you know, there is really no incentive for contract customers anymore, really. And again, this is something we've been speaking about at least over the last 2 years.
Yeah, do you go prepaid? A lot of people have gone prepaid. You're still on the contract.
I'm still on contract.
Why do you stay on contract?
Well,
or are you thinking of moving?
I don't know. For me, getting a phone, I mean, I wouldn't spend 15 grand on a phone every 2 years out of my pocket. It's just not what I would do. I mean, I don't value it that much. This allows me to get the latest and greatest phone every 2 years, and then I'm quite happy paying it off over that 2 period, even though it's more expensive. But when it comes to the call rates, I mean, the call rates, I'm certainly, that's where the dispute comes in, because now I'm still paying more for my calls and I'm not getting all those benefits. It's a difficult one to weigh up if you are deciding to go for it. Which one, you know, do you then hang on to your phone for, you know, and then buy your own phone every 2 years? It depends on how your budgets go, I guess, and what you prefer doing. But the cleverer move is certainly to go postpaid.
Yeah, certainly if you can manage those finances carefully and amortize the product, the cost of that phone yourself over the period.
Yeah.
Then it certainly makes sense to go prepaid. But if you want the operator to manage the amortization of that phone value over the period, then certainly you can allow them to do that, but you're probably going to be paying more over the long term. You will be paying more over the long term,
And you also mentioned earlier about the international roaming, which is still a big thing, or international usage of your device.
As far as I know, you can't roam easily if you're on prepaid. Yeah, I think you have to jump through a whole set of hoops, if it's even possible. I'm not sure.
I don't think you can with any of these packages. And that is another big thing. We both traveled quite a bit in our time, and that was always a big thing. You know, if you don't, you know, I wouldn't want to go into other country unless I'm going to be there for a while, for example, to get the local SIM card. So I'm happy just to do minimal roaming for phone calls.
I managed to get onto a Vodacom contract, which I know they don't advertise much because I don't think they want people to really know about it. But it's there if you ask about it. What it was when I signed up for it, and that's a SIM only deal where you don't get the handset, but you're still on a contract. So I get a bundle of voice minutes, data and SMSs, more SMSs than I could ever hope to use, you know, on a monthly basis, on a 24-month contract. But the price, the amount I'm paying is actually quite low because I supply my own handset.
There's 400, 500 rand saving there immediately.
I think I paid 350 rand a month for a gig of, I forget what it is actually, a gig of data and 250 minutes of voice and 1,000 SMSs, which is about all I really need. I phone a lot less than I used to. You know, I tend to WhatsApp more now. And
are you a WhatsApp WhatsApper?
I live on WhatsApp. I mean, I use it all day long. It's an interesting one.
And I think the data play also comes in. I mean,
data is actually the thing that bugs me now. Is voice is is not, you know, I think 15 years ago, you know, voice, I used to be conscious of how much time I spent talking on my phone. Now it's not an issue anymore. It just seems to become so cheap. It's not an issue, but data is so damned expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always seem to be topping up and adding bundles and all the rest of it. And I think it's become the significant cost for anyone who owns a smartphone.
And that's something I haven't done much recently because I'm on a contract and I'm on an MTN contract, so my data is handled through AfriHost. I'm signed up with them, so data through. Which that setup for me works very well.
And you all do that through the same SIM?
And I do it through the same SIM. I've got a second SIM on there too for my iPad and for my wife's iPad. So, and I can manage her data. And I can, if more companies would just offer that functionality where you're in control of your data and you can top up and very easily from any device.
Indeed. I really wish there were more high-end dual SIM devices available and more readily available in the South African market, you know, like an HTC One M9, like a Sony Xperia Z3, like iPhone doesn't do dual SIM devices. But I wish there were more of those sort of devices available in the market because, you know, I think it would make sense to stay with Vodacom, for example, for your voice service. Put in a second SIM that's for your data only linked to, say, Telkom.
But that's exactly the reason why these guys, the operators don't want to do it. I remember a few years ago...
Vodacom and MTN, sell C-Rangers dual SIM devices.
I remember working for a handset manufacturer a few years ago, and when they wanted to bring in dual SIM phones, I thought it was the most incredible thing ever. And it seems like such a logical solution.
And it is all over Africa. Dual SIM is the big thing in Africa, but MTN and Vodacom refused to range them in South Africa.
But that's the thing. Back then when I was asking the question, why don't we launch this device in South Africa, the simple answer was the operator don't want to buy it. As much benefit as what it would be for their own customers too. And it's just, taking away that competition within their own customers, I guess. Sad, but we're seeing some change in that now. We're seeing some more devices,
and increasingly people aren't relying on the operator to get their handset. Things like the Orange Store have really been, I think, very helpful to South African consumers because you can go buy a device for cash from somewhere else and then take that device to your operator and then select the package that you want that best fits around that device. And you can get those dual SIM devices through places like the Orange Store. Although, I'm still not seeing that sort of high-end, Androids that are, that people, typically on contract would want. They tend to be more sort of mid-tier price devices and then lower. Which I think is unfortunate. I mean, if I could get my hands on, say, a Sony Xperia Z3 or HTC One M9, or I'm just trying to think what some of the Samsung Galaxy S6 or what devices in those sort of classes, dual SIM, I'd absolutely go for it and get a second SIM for my data.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah. What about, I mean, the solution obviously is your Wi-Fi dongle, right? Your portable little...
That is a solution.
But it's not really a solution.
It's not really a solution because, you don't really, if you want to lug that thing around with you, if you're out in the middle of nowhere, I go do a lot of trail running, I don't want to have to... if I want to post pictures to Facebook from the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, then switch that on first. And
I don't really
it's
want
to... It's a bit of a sloppy solution.
Exactly. But that dongle is absolutely crucial as well because, I do a lot of work on the road and, I use AfriHost's mobile data through MTN.
Sure.
Because the amount of data I use every month, it's actually... Mobile data is now using about, probably on average, between 5 and 7 gigabytes a month. And on Vodacom, it's prohibitively expensive. You can only do it through an alternative provider.
And that's why I've been quite happy with my contract at MTN over the last probably 15 years that I've had it. And it's fortunately for me, it's just fallen into place and works the way I need it to work, especially with the AfriHost coming on board and I can do my data. If it wasn't for that, I might have had a different conversation today. But data is the biggest thing, and fortunately I can get my data at a good price, so the rest is kind of negligible.
Anyway, AfriHost is probably the subject for another podcast.
Another conversation, but we'll get to that.
Anyway, Let's move on to our regular segments then, Rechot. You wanted to chat about this week's winner.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you haven't heard about the Pluto flyby, you're certainly living under a rock. But it was NASA's New Horizons launch. It's a project that was 9 years in the making. They launched in January 19, 2006, sending off this space probe.
Yeah, it's been almost 10 years, eh?
Yeah, yeah. Almost 10 years in the direction of NASA and in the direction of Pluto. And I mean, if you think about the engineering that must go into into a mission like that.
It's remarkable. What amazes me most, and it's not the first time that NASA's done this, but it still blows my mind that they can actually do this with such pinpoint precision.
Mm.
Basically, they blasted this thing off towards Jupiter.
Yes.
And then they spun this, they used Jupiter's gravity to accelerate this thing up to some insane speed. I forget what it is.
They did it for the Mars probe as well, the same thing. Yeah,
yeah,
same
they do. They've often used Jupiter's gravity. It's not a new technique that they're using for this particular mission, but it's still pretty amazing that they can blast off. And I think I posted something on Facebook about this the other day. In fact, let me bring it up because it's just an amazing stat. But just bear with me a sec. Here it is. 1 second.
But I mean, the fact that they can communicate with a satellite this far, I mean, that's absolutely
incredible.
That's
also amazing, yeah. And the data transfer speed. Did you see?
Yeah. It takes a while for the high res photos to get to us.
1 kilobit per second.
Ah, that's crazy.
It's lower than dial-up.
56K.
It's lower.
It's lower than 56K.
It's 1/56th of that. Quite amazing. So yeah, what I posted on Facebook, I really summed it up for me was, so human beings launched a spacecraft 9.5 years ago, aimed it with deadly accuracy into Jupiter's gravitational field in order to accelerate it to 45,000 kilometers an hour and slingshot it towards a tiny dwarf planet 5 billion kilometers away from its starting point, only to graze past said dwarf planet at a distance of just 12,000 kilometers while taking high quality photographs and sending these back to Earth. We're not a stupid species.
No, certainly not. I mean, it's absolutely phenomenal that we can do that. And if you think of the technology, 9 years old, I mean, what do we have now
that's
9 years old that's still working? We've got apart from a pretension old TV,
probably not
nothing,
your phone.
Nothing.
Probably not your phone.
In fact, my TV isn't 9 years old.
Maybe if it
old.
Was
my
made by Nokia.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe Nokia built the spacecraft.
But you know, what a phenomenal achievement.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And the mission's not over. It's going to go into the Kuiper Belt now and continue taking pictures and taking measurements and all sorts of things. So, but it's the first time, it's amazing, the first time that humanity has ever seen high-resolution images of Pluto. Before, all we had was the highest quality images we had were from the Hubble Space Telescope, and they weren't high quality at all.
They were very pixelated.
You know, you couldn't see any detail on the surface.
And for a bit of a laugh, you can also check out the photographs that people have manipulated with Pluto's face on it. And there's some really cool
Pluto the Disney character,
of
course.
Yeah, the Disney character.
It was interesting that the first picture they sent, high-resolution picture they sent back, showed what looked like a giant heart on the surface of the planet as well, which was quite interesting. Still speculating about what exactly that... what exactly caused that on the surface. But amazing too to see some of the detail coming back, given how tiny this planet is. I mean, it's a tiny fraction the size of the Earth, but it's got mountain ranges on it that are higher than the Drakensberg.
That's phenomenal.
And they suggest that the planet is still geologically active, that the mountain ranges are actually fairly new It's certainly in terms of the age of the solar system.
Yeah. Look, it's certainly by no means going to be a summer destination. I mean, that's going to be a cold planet forever.
No, indeed.
Yeah. But fascinating.
Ninth rock from the sun.
Yeah. That's a ninth rock, yeah.
Not officially a planet anymore, though.
Yeah, sadly. Mm-hmm. But at least it's still getting a lot of attention. When was it decommissioned as a planet?
2005, I think.
Oh, so this was sent out after.
Oh, no, hang on. I actually read about this. It was blasted off in the
2006.
The probe went up in 2006, and I think it was just a couple of months after the probe went up that they decided that it was no longer a planet.
I'm sure there was one engineer that was fearing for his job at that point. Do we still go ahead with this or not?
Well, it was already in space.
On the way,
on the way, so no pulling back. Although I'm sure the guy behind the project, I forget his name, but the guy who really motivated for this and sort of led the project, I'm sure he was very disappointed when they decided that this was no longer a planet.
But it certainly paid off. I mean, if you see the amount of hype and I think this, you know, just looking at the achievement that this is, and
the reason it's not a planet, by the way, I was wondering about this. Well, they decided it not to classify it as a planet anymore. What do they call it now? Planetoid or something?
Planetoid, yeah.
Is that it intersects with the the orbit of Neptune, which is the eighth planet from the sun.
Yes, okay.
So at times it's actually the eighth planet from the sun, and body from the sun. Mm. And Neptune is actually further away.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's kind of in no man's land, part of its journey, and now the time it's in a.
So presumably at some point in the future. Well, I'm not sure what the chances are statistically, but it's probably extremely tiny. But I guess at some point in the future, unless there's some other cataclysmic event before then, I guess the Pluto and Neptune will collide if they intersect their orbits. I'm not sure if that's correct, but one would imagine that would happen.
It'd make for an interesting YouTube video, that's for sure.
Yes. Yeah. Hopefully we've got the Hubble 4 is up by then and we can watch it in real time.
Yeah,
streaming from
super HD on your 16K television.
Anyway, so that's our winner this week, and NASA and the new Horizons probe of Pluto. Our loser this week is MWeb Business for their catastrophic data center failure which occurred at the weekend. In fact, IT Web was reporting today that anyone who had data in there wasn't the customers hadn't backed up, have in fact lost their data. So that's catastrophic. I mean, that is a catastrophic screw up.
And not something that's good for your PR. I mean, let's be honest, you don't want to be with a.
No. I know that accidents happen, but geez, do you, man, it just raises all sorts of questions about, redundancy and I don't know. I'm not a data center engineer, but things happen. But surely you have systems in place to recover from a catastrophe like that. Actually, customers just physically losing their data.
Something major must have happened because short of
something happened to their virtual machine in infrastructure. Apparently, a lot of small clients in there. A lot of I think that MWeb Business hosts a lot of. SME websites and that sort of thing.
But even more so, I mean, the services that I host with other service providers, I mean, those things are backed up.
Mm.
Even though it's not part of their core service, it's backed up. There is redundancy, there's RAID. I mean, if one or two customers lose, it's one thing, but if all of them, it must have been massive. And the fact that they didn't have redundancies in just as a contingency is telling, I think.
Yeah. It's spectacular stuff up, and heads ought to roll actually over something scale. Yeah,
and I really feel sorry for those small businesses that you could potentially close down if you have your work and your business on that server.
Not good at all. To be fair, if you're a customer, you should ensure that you have backups in place, but. Many small businesses aren't going to do that. I mean, they've got a website, on many of them it probably won't have much of an impact, quickly redevelop it, but it's an inconvenience.
No, of course, but that's what I'm saying, for small business on these shared hosting platforms and services, I mean, it's much easier to provide redundancy for these than for dedicated or managed servers. They're generally a different beast. But anyway, I don't want to speculate here, but it's possible that it could have been something like a crypto locker that could ruin an entire array of servers quite easily. Not that it was that, but you never know. Something more malicious than just a server crash or an installation crash.
I don't think MWeb Business can try and brush this one under the carpet. There needs to be a full comprehensive and probably open report on exactly what went wrong and what they're doing to ensure it never happens again.
If the fact that it happened once is once too many, right?
Indeed. Anyway, that's our loser of the week, MWeb Business. That's quite a spectacular one.
Ouch.
Cool. What's your pick this week, Richard?
So I'm going to change my pick from what I originally said to you, because I just remembered we were speaking about the Pluto flyby. I don't know if you heard much about Google Jump.
No.
So Google is busy, and this is a technology that they're going to soon be making available to anybody to make use of.
Yeah.
But essentially, this works in conjunction with the Cardboard and also with YouTube. Now, what Google Jump is, it's an array of... So they've got this design that can fit a GoPro or any other action camera, really. But with this array of... You create 16 cameras. Now, they've obviously created the formula for this, and this is why it's 16 cameras with a specific field of view. And then what this allows you to do is to shoot video not in three dimensions, but in 3D all around you, where you can scroll around in a moving video. And if you go to YouTube and you search for 3D video, you'll see a lot of Google Jump
video. That makes it immersive, you mean?
Immersive, yeah. Mm. So some of the footage that you can see online is of cars racing. So it's a full-on video that you can watch. And then within that video that you watch, you can also scroll the screen sideways. So there's a music video out there as well that you can look at. So you look at it, and then wherever the camera's focused, you can pan sideways at least to see any angle of that.
Okay.
It's very fascinating. From what it looks like, it's going to allow you to obviously shoot the video using this. You can 3D print this. I know GoPros actually bring out a mount for it, but you will be able to print one yourself and fix any action camera to it.
Right.
And then upload the video to YouTube. I think what they're going to be doing is allow you to upload the video, and then they, with their processes, obviously, and their algorithms,
right,
stitch this thing together, because that's going to be the most complicated part of it, to overlap these 16 cameras so you get that fluent video experience.
Right, right.
But it's absolutely fascinating. I think what this is going to allow, not only for action videos, akin to what Red Bull Media does.
Yeah.
But this is going to make for very immersive immersive videos.
Yes.
Cats notwithstanding.
Yeah, we have got a cat fight going on here.
But go check it out, Google Jump. I'm looking forward to when the technology becomes available for me to play with, and I'll certainly be bringing you some videos on that so we can play with it.
Where are you going
to
get the 16 GoPros from?
No, I'll probably get some Garmin Verbs. I know some people, so that would work a bit easier.
Okay,
But yeah, once you get 16 cameras, this is going to be a nice 16, to
16 GoPros is going to be kind of pricey.
Yeah, 16. I think GoPro is putting a lot of marketing effort behind this, and it's nice to see that somebody's pushing this. Now, obviously, Google does need a partner to come aboard, but looking at how popular sports action videography has become, this is a natural evolution, and I can guarantee.
Imagine what you could do if you attached that thing to a drone.
Oh yeah, that could be interesting. That could be very interesting. Your drone you'll need to get something like the steady drones that can take a payload of probably 15 to 20 kgs.
Yeah,
No.
But then if you can afford 16 GoPros, then you can probably afford to the drone to go with it.
Oh yeah. I mean, this is going to be used for advertising. I think it's going to be big with this, and guys like Red Bull Media, they can put a lot of money behind this. It's kind of like a reverse bullet time. It's probably the best way to sum it up.
Yeah,
but it's very cool.
Yeah, I'm just thinking. Attach that to a drone, you could get some great coverage of surfing competitions.
Oh yeah,
especially ones down in Jeffreys Bay where the surfers are getting eaten by sharks. Some real action coverage.
Some real action. Yeah. No, it's absolutely fascinating, and yeah, keep an eye on it.
Great stuff. Cool. My pick this week is actually a finance pick, it's a bit of an unusual one. I'm certainly no fan of the MSN website, which has been around for ages, owned by Microsoft. But they've put out some interesting apps for Android. I'm not sure how long this app has actually been in the store, but I've installed it about a week ago. It's the MSN Money app for Android, and it's really good, surprisingly good. Better, in fact, than Google's finance app for Android. And it includes South African... I use it to track shares, shares that I'm interested in and shares that I actually have investments in as well. And it's got all the JSE shares on there, as well as shares from all over the world. You can track markets, stock exchanges around the world, get the latest news relevant to you, etc. Create watch lists. But the reason I think I like it mostly is, apart from the fact that it's got all the South African data in there as well, is its design. It's really beautifully designed. It's a good looking app, and when you drill down into graphing, if you go into a particular share, and you can really pull up graphs of historical graphs on share prices and stuff. And unlike many other sites, especially local sites, I find, which some still use JavaScript to draw these awful looking graphs.
Better than Flash, though.
It's a good looking app. It's got South African data. Lets you drill down into all sorts of metrics. It gives you market cap, PE ratios, other financial metrics that investors look at. And the share graphing functionality is great. So that's my pick of the week. It's MSN Money. I'm sure it's in the iOS or the Apple store, but I haven't checked. You know, Microsoft really cross-platform these days. It's certainly available in the Play Store. Rechot's just having a look quickly in the Apple Store to see if he can find it there, in the App Store, rather.
It's
there as well, yeah, that's it. That's my pick of the week. If you invest in shares and you'd like to keep an eye on the markets, I can recommend it.
Perfect.
Right, I think that's all the time we have for this show. As always, if you've got any feedback, we'd love to hear from you. Drop us a line at info@techcentral.co.za or leave a comment under the podcast. Until next time, from Rechot and myself, take care. Ciao.